Welcome to Casterbis. My name is Christian Corney. I'm joined this week by James McLean. How are you doing, James?
I'm okay.
Good.
I'm okay.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Have you been doing anything interesting lately?
No, I've been sitting here at this windowsill waiting for another podcast.
Yeah, we've just recorded a different podcast on a different topic, which you will either have heard or will be hearing soon. I'm just trying to manufacture some camaraderie with James here in order to spark off a conversation that can lead us into the main conversation of this podcast, and James isn't playing.
I rarely like to play, I like to defy. Everything is copacetic, it's okay. I don't know. I mean, there's some things in the news which bugs me at the moment, Christian. There's some things I read about these artificial intelligences. I don't know. I just wondered if you had a thought about this or a topic that could... Because all I do is sit by the window and just read.
About AI
posts, yes.
Well, look, we could have come at this at a different angle, but let's just go for it. So, AI, generative AI, has been a massive thing throughout probably the last 12 months since we've had tools like Midjourney taken off, and then we've had ChatGPT, ChatGPT 3.5 and ChatGPT 4 more recently, different iterations of this same technology. We've got... These tools are here now that can help us create things. We've got the tool that I meant to play with for us. I'm not sure if I did in the end. There's a tool called 11 Labs Voice AI, which creates voice audio based on your own voice, if you wanted to, or just some generic voice that you can move some sliders to create with different accents or whatever. We have video creating AI called Runway. We have all these tools that now enable us to, or anyone, to create video, visuals, audio that no one's actually taken part in physically. You've got the tools I mentioned already that can... They can't actually write original content, but they can write sort of derivative material. I've done a couple of really useful podcasts for MakeUseOf.com on the topics of AI, generative AI, and in particular, I've done one on voice AI and one on whether AI can do comedy. It can't do comedy. But as I say, this derivative, we've got comedians such as Sarah Silverman and various others who are very concerned over AI actually drawing on their material and other materials that have already been published in various forms, and whether their reuse is legal or otherwise. So this is a big deal that's coming along. And then we've got a big strike in the USA, and a major aspect of this for the writers and creative industries in Hollywood and US TV is AI, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a big... We knew AI was a thing, and it's been a thing for a long time, if we consider the term artificial intelligence being a glamour. It isn't actual intelligence, it is an illusion of intelligence. We've had it in video games and software for a long time, and not just in, and when I say in software, obviously it's in video games where you're playing against a computer. There's this artificial intelligence in the computer guiding what the computer does. Then we have software tools that will maybe guess what you're going to do next.
So I think probably worth sort of saying to the listener, when we're talking about AI here, we're not talking about the Skynet sort of AI. We're talking about software that allows to approach a task intelligently.
Yes.
Is what AI is, rather than it about it being intelligent, which is a different topic altogether.
Yes.
So in a sense, it's tools which massively speed up processes of different kinds to deliver certain outputs of data in one form or another, which is still a concern for many parties, as it can be a benefit for others.
Absolutely. So our stepping off point for this really isn't the little conversation that we had at the beginning of this podcast. It's really a tweet by a guy called Min Choi, who lists a collection of AI-generated video clips. Now, there are issues with these. They look stunning on first glance, but you will always find that there's a few issues. Maybe, you know, hands have too many fingers or that sort of thing. There's a bit of a problem with generated AI visuals. But what is astonishing is that this thing is real now. This is with us now, which has certain, I mean, it has a lot of implications, and it's going to change things considerably over the years to come. Now, in some ways, that might be a case of just making things easier for people, making CGI artists' life a little easier. As long as hands, I'm looking at a clip now, as long as hands and fingers aren't too heavily involved. There are other aspects to this as well. I've already alluded to what's going on in Hollywood at this moment, but there are other implications. You've got, I mean, cast your minds back to, I think it was 1986, The Running Man?
Mm-hmm.
In which Arnold Schwarzenegger, has The Running Man been remade at any point?
I have a feeling it has, but I've not watched it if it has.
It was 87, actually, not 86. In The Running Man.
It would have been made in 86, probably.
Well, of course, yeah.
Premiered in 87, probably.
Yeah.
So, Karen. Just saving you there, that's all.
Yes, it's based on a television show in which they have to escape death, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's character is shown to have done something terrible in order to end up in the television show. And it's obviously what he's done that was so terrible didn't really happen. It was fabricated evidence. Something like artificial intelligence could have created those visuals in order to make it appear that he had done that. I'm just looking at the the production of The Running Man. It's directed by Paul Michael Glaser. Based on a story by Stephen King as Richard Bachman, and with music by Harold Faltermeyer, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Yaphet Kotto. It's one of the most 80s things possible, isn't it? Oh, yeah, there's a new movie adaptation of the novel announced in 2021 is in development, but I don't think it's come along yet.
Right.
Which will be directed by Edgar Wright at this point, apparently. So, yeah, so the AI thing is here. And, I mean, you take more notice of things to do with production and television and movies and streaming and all those sort of things than I probably do. So, I mean, and, you know, we've both been involved in creative things to a certain extent over the years. So you must have some thoughts on this.
I think the first thought is that whole notion of the idea of sublime and banal, that you when a new technology emerges, that it's in a period of sublimeness where no one can quite see where it's going to go. Everyone's very excited and no one can really see what its pragmatic outcomes will be until it becomes banal. And that has been, everyone knows what it is, sort of like, I don't know, pencil. Is, you know, an exciting tool at first. You know, who knows what it's going to be useful. You know, eventually it's just a pencil. But I mean, obviously, the best example is something like the telephone or the television set. You know, the idea of what the visual output would be of things like telephone. Would it be television? Would it be used for telephonic communications? I don't think anyone really saw that it would end up being a box in the corner of a room, which everyone watched for 50 years before it was taken over by another box in another corner of the room. But we're in that sort of position where it is very much a sublime space, where it's all very exciting, and I see on social media feeds people being just excited about it, and that troubles me. Because there seems to be no attempt, and almost in some spaces a defiance, to actually look at any of the sort of context that we perhaps need to think about around these things. Because you're not going to stop them. They're going to happen. That's that's the terror, that's the blight, the curse, the blessing of technologies, is it? You can't stop it from happening, really. But you can look at ways of trying to manage how it happens. And I think one of the problems with digital, with the information age, is that it happens, has happened so fast, which is some in part what the strikes in America are all about, really.
Yeah.
It's happened so fast that society and industries have not really met, have not met the demands of that appropriately. So in terms of the strikes in the States, it's not just about AI, it's about other conditions and something to do with streaming as well, you know, and how streaming residuals work and how that has never been, that still is it, the position of that is still basically a framework which existed before streaming became big and needs to be revised is what they argue. And I think that is an issue with AI. And we've already, I'm sure we've already seen on social media various accounts of people saying how they've been iced out of jobs because the employers decided that they've got an AI now who will write the article and then they just need someone just to tweak it at the end for a smaller fee. So, you know, there is a concern to job markets.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the bottom line for me is, again, is just that. Is that there needs to be a stronger focus on less on how wonderful and exciting this is. But, and this comes from people, not the people who are actually shouting their excitement, but the people higher above them in governmental, in policy circles, in industry, who need to be thinking about frameworks to make sure that it is managed in a way that is sensible and fair for society. Because the bottom line is, I know people will argue, well, you know, society changes, job roles change, you know, you get rid of the you get rid of one job, but then you create a new job, which will therefore, you know, you get rid of the pen and work illustrator, you introduce the CG artist. But there comes a point in some jobs where they're not like for like. You get rid of one job, or you get rid of a load of jobs which can be managed by one job. You start to change your workforces, which can lead in short terms to, you know, unemployment. It can even long term to a degree. We've seen areas of countries which were high industry areas, you know, through the changes of the ages, become weaker social spaces because they don't have a job market anymore because the jobs have been drawn out of those areas. I'm not trying to defy the future of where this could go, and I don't know enough about this to make any clear opinions or claims. But I just feel that the most sensible thing at the moment would be that there needs to be a greater scrutiny of how this works so it actually benefits. For instance, you mentioned how as the Twitter link that you had, that this would bring this could help people working in visuals, in VFX. Sorry for my stutterings, I'm trying to get my head together. Because it might lessen their workflow in doing certain jobs, because the AI as a tool, as we've said, can expedite data quickly. There's some tasks like putting together trailers, for instance, could be done far faster and then perhaps tweaked up at the end by a human hand where needed. That's fine, and that would reduce their workflow unless their work days don't change. It just means more is put on them. Do you see what I mean?
Yep.
So you're not actually helping the artist in their labour if it just gives space for an employer to create, to give them more labour. So we know that visual artists, VFX companies are massively, intensely used by as third parties. You know, they're hired, they get. A lot of work is put on them. A lot of them burn out quite quickly as well. It's a very intensive workspace, and it would be great to think, could AI reduce some of that work, that labour, to allow people working that in those sort of industries last longer because it's not so intense, because some of those job roles that would be expected to create a movie or to create a television show are supported by AI tools. But if it ends up that those AI tools just help the people running those companies or those companies which they're working for expect more out of them, then it's not helped at all. And I think that's the kind of thing we need to be thinking about, is how can the AI be infused in a way which is beneficial rather than just about, you know, people looking for a cheaper way of producing material. And let's be honest, a lot of stuff doesn't have to be great material. You know, a lot of stuff we see in media is derivative or not of great quality. I mean, there was that famous recently, The Secret Invasion, the Disney film, Disney TV show, which did its opening sequence with an AI as a point of trying to, they argue that the theme of the show being about sort of secret invaders, effectively people in disguise that you are unaware of, which I don't think really is something that should be put as a positive thing in the way you produce your show, but that was kind of where they were leading to. And there's a lot of concerns, you know, what does that mean? You know, will people watch that? A lot of people wouldn't realise it was done by an AI. They'd watch it was an opening sequence to move on to the show. It wouldn't take much for a lot of companies to go, well, we don't need that. Or it can create, you know, we don't need a great poster. We can get a poster that would just run it through an AI that takes a few photos and uses a GTA filter and gives us a cool looking poster at the end, and we'll bang that out and it'll cost us next to nothing. It'll do it for most of our output, so we don't have to pay anyone.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem I find with it. And then everything that comes out ends up starting to look flat and derivative as well. So... yeah, Mike.
Because you've got the wrong people creating, haven't you?
Yes.
You've got the wrong people in charge of creation. Suddenly, you're not using artists, you're using computers, and then you can put anyone in charge of using the computer to do that. So you're limited by what the computer can do and what the software can do, and, of course, by the imagination of the person who's using a computer to create art. That's already a problem right there, isn't it? I mean, that's a red flag.
It's a red flag. And let's be clear, I mean, we've seen this sort of thing happen before with CG, you know, and quite often the output of just relying on sort of CG models, cheap CG models, has actually made work seem derivative. And there's been a big push. There was a big push to make VFX look really good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the 90s,
yeah.
And you would see a lot of that, and people were like, we don't want that. In fact, you know, the prequel Star Wars trilogy was largely promoted on the idea that it didn't use CG, even though it did.
Yeah.
It was not the prequels. Sorry, the sequels.
The sequels. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm with you. Based on the prequels, yeah. So the prequels obviously did promote on the use of CG as a great thing, despite the fact that they did actually use a lot of model stuff as well. But they didn't promote that in their promotions. You know, the way to the audience was to say, look at the great new advances that we're using here,
yeah.
And that was their way. And then the sequels came along and were like, we don't use CG, really. Look, we've got full models of the Millennium Falcon. We've got these full models here. Let's show off all this stuff. But they were using CG a lot as well. But that was, they realized their audiences were resistant to that. So the actual hands-on creative approach was part of the way that they sold the sequels. So I think there is a certain amount where we could see a dip where companies do try to use AI, and maybe people will actually get more resistant to it. I have argued to some people before, maybe this could be a big boom for the theatre industry, because if the AI does start to become a big thing and people and culture starts to resist that, no matter how good it is, the way it kind of resists stuff is goes and does other things. Could it see, you know, live action stuff, live theatre,
yeah,
become something which is more engaging because people like people. And it, again, you look at the recent Babylon 5 DVD, the animated DVD, which came out recently, or Blu-ray, from Warners. You know, one of the first things that people were talking about when they heard about that is, are the original voice artists in it? How are you going to do it when someone passed away? People were more interested in the human element than they were in the recreation of that world,
yeah,
as an animated show. So the human count the thing. And if you said to someone, oh, well, we've got someone who's, we've got an AI to make it sound exactly like them, people don't like it.
No.
People didn't like the chain, you know, with the Fast and Furious, when they did the CG elements to that. Even, I think, was it one of the Disney ones with Darth Vader? Was it something which used a, was an AI used to do the Darth Vader voice from one? I'm not sure, maybe.
Yeah, in Kenobi.
In Kenobi. So... And people don't go, oh, wow, I'm really cool. That's really... A lot of them just go, I'd rather have, you know, J.M.L. Jones. Or
yeah,
there's that sort of kickback. So I don't think we can sort of... I don't think we're in a point where we need to be going, oh, my God, AI is going to take over our art. But I think there are cultural questions we should do to protect workers from being exploited, and creative managers of companies exploiting workers or looking for easy ways, which in the end are probably not going to go down as well for audiences.
It's all,
I think, yeah, I think governments should be looking at policy on this all across the world.
Well, governments are famed for their lack of motion and then horrific inertia 20 years later, aren't they? So,
well, that's the interesting thing in America is, you know, will the strike in America have to have some form of political intervention? Is it going to be so much of a stalemate? So eventually, you know, governments do have to look in. You know, California has lost a lot of money through this, you know, in terms of its economy. You know, there's projections that studios may have lost, you know, multiple amounts of money that as a group that they would not have lost if they'd agreed to what the right, you know. Again, I'm not trying to get political on this. I think it's just an interesting thing where I just feel that there is a question here that we need to be facing.
Yeah. Whoever's in charge needs to do something about it.
Probably needs to do something to protect the economy and the people, whoever they are.
And just to backtrack a little bit. So just to clarify exactly what's going on here. So in the US, you have a strike by the Screen Actors Guild American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, which is SAG-AFTRA, and the Writers Guild of America, the WGA. And this has forced the studios to halt production of TV shows and movies. On the picket lines outside Netflix, The Guardian reported in July, one SAG-AFTRA member after another described being fired up. Zeke Alton, a member of the negotiating committee, said that this whole thing ends the profession if protections aren't put in place against AI usage. They're forcing us to negotiate and bargain for our very existence, or certainly their existence as employable people. He added, when our very recognisable members speak, the world tends to listen, and we're aware of that. UPS is having issues, Starbucks is having issues, teachers are having issues, nurses are having issues. We have a really loud voice at SAG-AFTRA, and we're speaking for everyone. It is speaking personally, I provide my services as an editor to a online publishing company, let's call them. I've noticed that there's increased interest in using AI for publishing. Now, my colleagues and I have kind of steadfastly refused to get involved in any of that. But elsewhere, other publishers are using AI. They've sacked writers and replace them with AI. They've sacked a few editors and replaced them with people who are prepared to tweak AI. They have, this is AI written articles, which you can use Bard, you can use ChatGPT, you can use any of those tools to simply create text. There is also the whole element, people being replaced and, you know, people literally losing their jobs. So, I mean, I don't want to be involved in any of that happening. But there are other ways to use these tools, which aren't necessarily the great solution, but it means that they are being used. Now, the question is, do they need to be used? Now, my feeling of this is that over time, and James alluded to this earlier, these AI tools across the board are going to be folded in to what, you know, as things are at the standard, you've got computer use as we've always known it for the past 5 years or so, maybe, let's say. And then you've got this new technology, the AI. Now, as with other things like SSL for encryption and video chats and any other big thing that came along and seemed like a huge thing at the time, these things will be folded, CGI, these things will be folded in and become part of the norm. And it's how it gets folded in, how it becomes part of the norm, and how that impacts people's livelihoods and incomes that are the real question behind why these people are striking, and kind of why we're discussing this today as well. I'm minded of a couple of things, James. Number one, you mentioned CGI earlier. I watched the, there's a video on YouTube, which I'll attempt to include in the show notes, of Ed 209 and various other stop motion sequences from the RoboCop movies sped up to 60 frames a second. I don't like them. I like them at the original speed. There's something that feels more realistic and clumsy about, not clumsy about the art, or clumsy of the actual creations, those actual machines moving around supposedly to do a job to protect the public. And they're obviously complete failures. And I think they need to be at the sort of 24 to 30 frames per second that they are in the original movies. The other thing I'm minded of is something that impacts us all. Self-service stations in supermarkets. Now, I know this isn't AI, but it is an example of how technology has come into the everyday and has taken people's jobs. And, you know, it might be said, oh, well, someone else has got a job out of it. But where are they? Where is this job? Where is this happening? And would the person who was previously taking my goods to be purchased and swiping them over a barcode scanner, would they be able to do that new job? I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
Losing the personal touch is one thing. There's plenty of people who are lonely who appreciate the opportunity to speak to a cashier once a week or whatever. And, you know, that might be the difference between the fulcrum of their existence. But then you've got the people losing their jobs. And then you've got this other aspect. I'm going shopping to buy things for myself. I'm paying the same prices. You're not reducing the prices, and now I'm doing your job for you. The next stage, surely, is that I start getting things out of the warehouse. After that, I start delivering things to the warehouse. You know, it's these things are done, and they say, oh, well, these will save us money. The shareholders will like it, etc., etc. It's not about the shareholders. It's about the people that are buying the goods, people that are using the services. It's about the audience. Will the audience appreciate a show that's made entirely out of AI? I think they'd probably watch it at first to see what all the fuss is about, but I think it would die off very quickly soon afterwards.
It's like you say, I mean, there is that push to make things, as I say, cost effective or simpler, but I think people do like richness to life, and I think this goes across the board, and this isn't about talking about classes or politics. You know, people like a nice coffee shop. You know, McDonald's had a long spree of just being quite basic, and eventually it had to compete with the sudden influx of the chains which tried to offer something which was a little more fresh, and they had to adapt their way. And there was a point, you know, about 10 years ago, where McDonald's wasn't looking great, that they were looking like they're in a poor place, and they had to massively shift their approaches to remain competitive, which they have done. My point being is that I do think, I think I would like us as a society to be more society aware and a little less snobbish as well. I mean, I think I don't use self-service because the reason I don't tend to use it, because there tends to always be something which beeps or doesn't go through, and then someone has to come and help me. And then maybe, is that because I'm old? I don't think so. I think there are, you know, I'm not doing anything that anyone else is doing, but there's always something which doesn't quite work. And there's always, you know, that one person overseeing the sort of eight self-service spots, which would have been eight jobs. And I don't like them. I prefer to actually go to a person, and I agree with you. I think there is a social engagement. It creates jobs, which is something which every politician looks to say, that we are creating jobs. And yet you know, technology will invariably, as we've seen, you know, over the last few centuries, you know, will take jobs away from people. And some people will say, well, that's the way things are. And you can go, well, yeah, but we're also an intelligent, in theory, empathetic and kind species. We should also be thinking about, you know, what's good for society as well. And I think that's where the AI thing's got to be. It's like, what is good for society? And as you're right, I think AI can be extremely beneficial. My thought is in medicine, you know, in terms of healthcare. You know, AIs can sift through data in a way that human beings can't, for, you know, for health, and especially health systems which are heavily overloaded with bureaucracy, needed bureaucracy as well. You know, maybe AI has a place in those sort of spaces to sort of, our populations are still growing, and can AI take some of that labor away from jobs without meaning that we have to extend people? Or, because that's the problem with society, isn't it? And I'm careful about feeling, I don't want to get political in this, but I just think we should all have jobs which we can, okay, jobs are never enjoyable, but aren't cruel or overworking people. And if AIs can help in jobs to minimise that, I think that's great. But like you say, we need to be sort of working to sort of make sure that it's used in a way which helps rather than just helps shareholders.
Yeah.
Which is the concern, or, you know, helps someone at the top save money so that they can be earning more. And it's just like, you know, surely we can be better than that. It benefits everyone to have a happy society, to have a balanced society. Everyone in that society will do benefit from it. You know, a happier person working in a shop is going to probably serve you better than someone who is unhappy or fatigued. That's a given, isn't it? You know, if people have happier spaces to work, they're going to provide better service than those who don't.
Yeah.
So can we use AIs in ways to benefit that? And that goes across all industries. But yeah, I think there is a concern, certainly, as you say, from the way that AI has been jumped upon and sort of has fans, sort of almost fans without there being a reason, that I find kind of weird. You know, so an AI can create a trailer. Well, so what? If the trailer can help a studio meet its demands and help its, you know, workers' workload so that they remain unfatigued and continue in that job and improve and do great stuff, that's great. But you shouldn't be just applauding it just because it can do it. It's like, to me, that's just kind of pointless. So it seems, sometimes it seems to be almost like an advocation for technology for the sake of technology. And I find that always a bit weird and a bit uncomfortable because we're, you know, we're a society. We're just not spectators of technology. Technology's got to work within society.
Yeah.
And society doesn't work anymore.
Well, here's the thing. Here's a challenge for the listener because it's probably a good time to sort of start winding down and wrapping this up a little bit. So here's a challenge for the listener to come back to us with, okay? What is more impressive? Is it someone typing in and enjoying the fruits of their computer's labour using a generative AI tool for video stills or audio or whatever? Or is it a child, an adult, whatever, learning how to do stop motion?
Yeah, that is another problem with AI, is that when it becomes part of the training or becomes part of education, you have the risk that certain skills become lacking because they become reliant upon the AIs to do those generating tasks. Okay. I can't say it. You know what I mean.
Generative.
Thank you. That again has always been the same. It was the same when you start having things like Photoshop and Illustrator and various models, you know, typefaces we've discussed before, I think, with logos. You lose certain understandings of shapes and designs if you let something else do it for you. So there's always those risks, and we haven't touched upon and we won't, but you know, there's always this, I think you alluded to it in the beginning, you know, there's the criminal element as well. You know, this is fast generative procedures like this can be used for illegal means as well. And again, it requires governments and institutions, policing agencies, technologies, universities, all to sort of be looking at these problems and looking for ways to protect people, which is ultimately what society should be about. It should be about protecting everyone, whether they're rich or they're poor, you know, and making sure that everyone is safe. And I think we need to see a little more of that, a little less celebrating what we can see they can do and a little more thinking about what are the implications, because we're not in that state where it's banal yet. It's still very sublime. And maybe we're both overreacting, who knows? But I think it wouldn't harm to see more engagement in making sure that these tools can be used to support and help us. And I think they can, especially, as I say, with workloads. We see the NHS heavily overloaded and heavily, the workloads there are massive. You know, if you've got tools which can not just help with bureaucracy, but maybe they can help in terms of sifting through medical data, which could be, I don't know medicine to be able to say, they could be great. AI could be very useful in helping us support a society which needs more, which always needs more. I've got a pigeon staring at me through the window.
Ah, well, that's what happens if you sit by the window for too long.
I don't like it. I think it's trying to communicate with me, and it's communicating bad things.
Well, that's they're known for that, the pigeons, aren't they? We were I think the birds themselves, I think they are just, you know, all of bird life. I think they're actually conspiring against humanity at the moment. I'm not saying maybe they shouldn't.
Good reason.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not just saying they're wrong. You know, you've got this whole thing of seagulls and seaside towns and what have you. Like we went to Whitby a couple of days ago, and we've had trouble with the gulls in Whitby in the past. Kerry's been assaulted by one with her fish and chips, so has Bruce with a sausage. I was saying they were wielding the fish and chips, the sausage, they're trying to steal the food. And other signs everywhere saying not to feed them because, you know, it's actually getting quite dangerous. So yeah, maybe that's what's going on. Maybe they're rising against us, as predicted by Hitchcock, who used real birds. He didn't use AI or CGI.
Well, yeah, and I always think it's interesting when we have sort of these sort of technologies which become so seamless, as CG has and AI to some degree will, is that it takes the fun out of it. There was a you'll see posts on YouTube and other social medias of people looking at some of those old visual effects techniques from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and trying to work out how they did it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they can be incredibly innovative. And I think as a human, that's far more engaging. And something we lose now with technologies is that you watch or you look at something, even a fan piece of work doing a regeneration scene of Doctor Who, it's harder to see the seams, the casual person. That takes some of the fun out of the pleasure of the art.
Yeah.
I'm not, again, saying that's not good. I mean, that's in a sense part of its skill, but I think back to the 80s and the 90s, sometimes some of the fun is being able to half see how they did it.
Yeah. My son's very inquisitive about these things. He knows that CGI didn't exist before a certain time. And we were watching something quite recently. I can't remember what it was now. And he said to me, how did they do that background? So then I obviously enjoyed explaining the whole mat thing to him.
Mm.
And the paintings and everything. What was it? I can't remember what it was. I think it was one of those biblical things. Those biblical epics from the 50s or one of those.
And the sort of mind-blowingness, you think even back to the 60s where you've got, even like say the Doctor Who, where you've actually got that live recording process while they'll be doing the scene and they'll be setting up the scene next to it.
So
that sort of process, that almost theatre-like level. And I think that is something which humans find really engaging. And I think that the danger of AI for producers is that it's a flat technology, that it will not give you any depth. It does what it does,
and
there's no creativity behind it.
There's barriers, isn't there, with technology? Technology brings with it sort of labour-saving things and improvements in fidelity, let's say, across the board. But it also introduces a barrier to that sort of more basic people playing for other people, doesn't it?
Yes, you've got to have a certain and also that barrier is often paywalled as well, which means only certain people can tap into it, which can take some of that thrill away. I think another thing to notice, I mean, I always thought that people like in their 20s and 30s would always be very highly sort of just focused on technology, but my experience of colleagues who are in that area, in that sort of, they've all loved crafts, sort of physical materials and having books and having graphic novels and going to craft fairs. You know, there's sort of very big millennial and sort of millennial / Gen Z sort of stuff to do, which is out there. And I think, again, AI, especially to older generations, think, this is just all the things which the young people we can tap them for, is that you'll often find that young people will actually resist it because there's a physicality that a lot of them like. Not all of them, because, you know, they're not just one group mind, one gestalt, but that still exists there, if not more so. I think the more digital we get, the more exciting and scarce the physical stuff becomes, the more material stuff becomes, and that can be exciting too.
That's interesting. It's interesting to hear that. Anyone who's who's had the endurance to listen to us waffle on over the years may recall I have a niece who was kind of the first child I introduced Doctor Who to, purely accidentally, I might add. And she's 19 now, and so she's grown up to all of these wonderful let's call them, developments. She has a smartphone. She lives in a house with a games console but rarely uses it. I think she has a, she might have a laptop. I've never seen her with it away from a kitchen table. She's not something she takes with her anywhere. And she uses her phone for reading books and listening to audiobooks. And when she's not doing that, she's either knitting and sewing.
Yep, it's a lot of that.
Riding horses. And she's also, she's starting university shortly after Christmas because she's doing nursing. I've never seen a young person, not even from my generation, with her work ethic. She's up every 6 a.m. every weekend. What I will describe as gardening, basically, for people. She's amazing. And her sister's a bit more sort of keyed into technology, perhaps. But even so, she's also has a few sort of more crafty sort of skills. And I don't know. I feel as though maybe our generation maybe skipped that a little bit.
Well, I imagine it's more generations resisting previous generations to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like the angry people on social media tend to be sort of 40, 50-year-olds, which is a shame because they were the generation which kind of created it. But I think younger ones, yes, they don't use social media in the same way. And again, like I said earlier, I think it's always important to point out it's not everyone. You'll always find there's large exceptions to the rules. But yeah, I've tend to find in my engagement with generations younger than me, they tend to be very far more physical, material. They still do social media. They still, you won't see them as much on Facebook. They'll still have accounts there, but they won't use it. They're more likely to be dropping sort of stories on Instagram, cursory look at some of the sort of more Twittery social medias, but I think that's changing now.
It's funny you mentioned Facebook, actually, because, you know, before the AI thing exploded, the thing that everyone's focus was on was Facebook and Meta and Mark Zuckerberg's funny little video creatures, our avatars that would replace us, and we would all work together in these virtual spaces. And I mean, that doesn't really bring us full circle or anything, but it does highlight how these things can come along and distract us, as that did with huge fanfare when it was announced. I think they're quietly retiring it. But it came along with huge fanfare and then it's kind of disappeared now. And I think a lot of people expected the same thing to happen with the AI thing, that it would come along with huge fanfare and then disappear. My thoughts at the time when it was first all around, we talked about it quite a lot with my fellow editors over the in my editing team. And don't want to mention anything for posterity. Things might change. My editing team, and we were all concerned about it, but we all knew it was going to, you know, it was going to become an element of it was going to become every day, let's say. And it was all a matter of working out what it was going to be and where it was going, which way the wind was blowing, what was going to be retained, what was going to impact us. And what we found is that there are writers who will try and use AI rather than rely on their own experiences and their own writing. And there are publishers that will attempt to use AI to summarise articles. You'll have noticed this is a growing trend in news sites. Maybe you haven't, James, but perhaps a listener has. That will provide a summary of the article at the top of the article. Almost certainly that summary has been created by an artificial intelligence algorithm like ChatGPT or Bard or whatever. So it is happening and it is here, and it you know, we need that protections need to come in place, because I think what will happen, I mean, I can't talk too much about video and graphics, but I can talk about what's happening with writing and online publishing. And I think what will happen is that the companies that go all in with the AI are going to end up with very flat content. I've said content, I do tend to not say content, but because it's created by AI and it hasn't been created by a person, I'm going to say content, that people will stop reading and they will start to gravitate towards things like Substack and personal blogs and wherever actual journalists are writing, rather than where an editor has been employed to instruct ChatGPT to output words on a topic.
Yeah, I think they will. And I think there's a chance as well that if it stays a hot topic, there may become a resistance where there is a cultural dislike of those sort of sites, and people kind of stay away from them, that it cheapens. That can happen as well. Yeah. I think it's a short-term gain. I think the invisibility of AI can be a problem, and also a problem for things like education sector. You know, think of essay writing and the like. You know, that becomes a problem, and how So I think the problem with AI, I think the main concern is authenticity to some way. That when you read something, do you know it's not a person? So if you read an article, does it make a difference if you know that that article has been generated? And of course, the other thing we haven't touched upon, which we haven't got time to, we have sort of alluded to, is also sort of the data mining and scraping of content, which again is another issue for artists, and a justifiable one too. And again, you just don't see it in a lot of the social media users who look, you know, look at me, look at this great image of me, and you think, well, a lot of that's probably been mined from someone else's work. And I know some people would argue on the other side and go, well, all art is based on other people's artwork. You know, it's all based on being inspired by other people's art, is inspired by art. But I think there's something quite cynical if you use that against a machine, which
derivation
is
isn't the same as inspiration, is it?
Yeah. And again, you know, people who literally copy someone else's artwork are plagiarizing artwork and have, you know, are seen like that in society. So there's a difference between being inspired and actually mining and utilizing. And yeah, so again, I think that's just something, again, in terms of information that we need to be thinking about. How do we protect people's work? Because people genuinely believe their work should be protected. So that should be something considered.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So a lot to think about there, dear listener. I dare say we'll come back to this topic at some point, not least if something happens in Hollywood and they find a way to end all of the strikes and move on, and how this will be replicated in other parts of the world, other key production industries such as, you know, the UK and Asia. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. Until then, we'll be back for another show soon. Until then, it's goodbye.